Good morning, everyone. I now call the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Majority Leader Swazinski. Minority Leader Swazinski. Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bo.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Franson, present.
Representative Brunet.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hornstein.
Present.
Representative Igo is excused. Representative Lee.
Lee, present.
Representative Lippert.
Lippert, present.
Representative Lislegard.
Present.
Representative Meckland.
Present.
Representative Munson.
Munson, present.
Representative Stevenson.
Present.
Swazinski, present.
Marked you down.
All right, we have a quorum present. We do have minutes from our last two meetings. Representative Akam, have you had a chance to review them, and would you care to move the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have, and I would like to move minutes.
All right, Representative Akam moves the minutes from February 3rd and February 8th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are adopted. Members, we have a, I think, really interesting hearing ahead of us today, focusing on transmission, and we're going to dive right in because we have a large number of testifiers, and I want to make sure we have time for a good discussion. So we are dividing it into three parts, and we'll take questions after each of those segments. For the first part, we're going to be hearing about the challenge of what our transmission system in Minnesota looks like. And our first testifier is David Niles with the Minnesota Municipal Power Agency. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Long, and to the committee for allowing me to speak today. My name is David Niles, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Municipal Power Agency. MMPA is a joint action agency and political subdivision of the state of Minnesota. Our members are 12 Minnesota communities across the state who provide electric power to more than 160,000 Minnesotans. Our mission is to provide reliable, competitively priced power to our members and to create value for the agency and its members. In 2020, we celebrated a quarter century of operations. I'd like to talk to you today about three transmission-related issues. First, how transmission constraints are affecting MMPA and the performance of our existing generation resources, especially renewable energy resources. Second, how a lack of transmission capacity is affecting MMPA's ability to add new renewable energy resources in Minnesota. And third, how MMPA would like to see increased access to transmission investment opportunities for all Minnesota utilities. Transmission constraints are affecting MMPA and the performance of our existing generating resources. Like most Minnesota utilities, MMPA operates in the MISO energy markets. MISO runs complex models that set the price paid to electric generators across its 15-state footprint. These prices are set by supply and demand throughout the system, but local and regional transmission constraints can result in prices being adjusted upward or downward. MMPA owns the Oaklyn Wind Farm, a 44-megawatt wind project constructed in 2011 near Blooming Prairie, Minnesota. In recent years, the price paid to MMPA by MISO has been steadily decreasing because of transmission congestion. This past year in 2021, the hourly Oak Glen price was negative more than 16% of the time, or about 4 hours out of every day on average. A negative price means that MMPA would have to pay to generate, so we often curtail the turbines from producing power to manage our costs and ultimately our rates to our ratepayers. This curtailment results in less renewable energy being produced by MMPA and impacts our progress towards a less carbon intensive future. Our costs and therefore rates are higher because we aren't able to fully utilize that wind resource. In addition to affecting our existing resources, a lack of transmission capacity is affecting MMPA's ability to add new renewable energy resources in Minnesota. Several years ago, MMPA had a contract to buy all of the output from the Dodge County Wind Farm, a planned 170-megawatt wind project. After more than 2 years in MISO's interconnection planning process, in 2019, the project's total cost for interconnection and system upgrades was estimated to be $118 million. an amount so high that the developer elected to terminate the contract and not proceed with the wind farm. This decision was a significant setback in our plans to increase the renewable percentage of our power supply portfolio. The high amount of interconnection costs, combined with the length and uncertainty of the transmission interconnection planning process, makes it challenging for utilities to plan their future investments in renewable energy. Final topic I want to talk about today is access to transmission investment opportunities. The CapEx 2020 projects did much to improve and modernize the transmission infrastructure in Minnesota and the surrounding states. MMPA supports and encourages additional transmission investment in Minnesota. This investment could mitigate transmission congestion and enable cost-effective future renewable resource additions. However, access to collaborative investment opportunities such as CapEx 2020 should be afforded to all Minnesota utilities so that entities like MMPA can fully participate. MMPA would support legislation that requires the opportunity to invest in transmission to be allocated proportionately to a utility's load within Minnesota. Such legislation would increase the amount of capital available for transmission investment and ensure that all users of the system share responsibility for it. Increasing the available capital for transmission investment should help resolve the constraints and challenges I've described today. Once again, thank you for your time, and I look forward to hearing from the other testifiers.
Thank you so much, Mr. Niles. Next, we are going to be hearing from Betsy Engelking, who is the Policy and Strategy Director with National Grid Renewables. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Engelking.
Thank you, Chair Long and members of the committee. My name is Betsy Engelking. I'm the Vice President of Policy and Strategy for National Grid Renewables. Many of you probably formerly knew us as Geronimo Energy. We were acquired by National Grid in 2019. We're a utility scale solar and wind developer with about 5,000 megawatts of wind and solar either online or under construction in the history of our development. And a lot of that is in Minnesota. So I'm going to share a presentation here. Hopefully I don't screw it up. It's highly likely. So what I want to say is that down here. There we go. So right now, you know, Minnesota has always had very robust policies to support the development of renewable energy. They started in the early 1990s. Lots of people who are talking to you today were there and worked on putting these policies in place. They include things like favorable tax policy, a preference for renewables, the renewable portfolio standards that were passed in 2007. And some practical siting processes that were developed specifically for renewables as a recognition that they were a little different from other power plants. So as a result of these policies, right now Minnesota is sixth in the nation with about 5.6 gigawatts of operational wind and solar. And that's as of the third quarter of 2021, so that's pretty recent data from the American Clean Power Association. One of the things that these renewables have brought to Minnesota is a large economic impact and an economic development impact. In 2020, Minnesota counties received $14 million in tax revenues from operating wind. In many of cases, that tax money is a third or more of those county budgets. A recent University of Minnesota study looking at six new wind projects totaling $1 billion in investment decided that it would generate $550 million in economic benefit, $44 million annually, and $8.7 million in annual income to Minnesotans who work at those facilities full time. We're at a period right now where there is unprecedented demand for renewable energy. There are utilities that are demanding it in order to meet some of their climate goals, most of which exceed many of the renewable energy standards that have been set by states. There's also industrial customers who are seeking to meet their own sustainability goals and are purchasing renewable energy through virtual PPAs or directly in states where they're allowed to do that. And during this large demand increase, Minnesota projects have nearly come to a halt. And that has happened for a number of reasons. First of all, MISO has been very delayed in getting their interconnection studies out. We're currently waiting on results from a 2017 group of interconnection projects in which we had a contract that was supposed to be in service as of the first of this year. And we are still waiting. And it's not all MISO's fault. So I'll give Brian a break here. It is also the fault of our neighboring RTO, SPP, which has to do affected system studies, and they have not prioritized those in terms of getting information back to MISO on what those costs of interconnection might be or the injection capability. So we're showing right now on that particular contract I mentioned that there's no injection capability into the system unless new lines are built, even if we can interconnect at a reasonable cost. And then the third, and I think the biggest problem is there's just been a lag in planning, permitting, and constructing new lines. So as a result of this huge activity and the inability to build in Minnesota, Minnesota is losing out to new renewable installations, and they're losing out to all of that economic development opportunity that comes to the state in the form of jobs, income, particularly for rural areas. In the first three quarters of 2021, the American Clean Power Association said that there were 17.5 gigawatts of contracts available for new wind and solar. Minnesota's share of that contract was one 253 megawatt wind contract, which is only about 1.4% of that activity. And you can see, as Minnesota's historically been a leader in this area, we're significantly lagging on those issues. Minnesota has projects that are permitted, near permitted, even contracted, like the example that I gave, that are in advanced development and can't get contracts because they can't get interconnected. And there's actually no sign of this really abating until maybe 2024 or 2025. And so as a result, we and other developers are taking our business to other states. You know, we have projects in Minnesota. We'd love to build projects in Minnesota, but we can't right now simply because of this transmission challenge. MISO, I got a sneak peek of MISO's presentation, and they're going to talk a lot about their long-range transmission plan. But the basic preview is that they're proposing a number of new lines to be constructed that will allow interconnection of more clean energy and also general system upgrades that are needed for reliability. Like a lot of things, this plan has been somewhat delayed. They were supposed to take it to their board in December of 21. It's now been delayed to May of 22. And once those lines are approved, the plan is approved, the lines can take up to 10 years to develop and permit and construct. So you can see how long it might be in order to get actual additional clean resources. In addition, there's a second plan. I don't know if MISO is going to talk about it. That was just put out a study on seams lines that could happen between MISO and SPP in the Dakotas and Nebraska that could also improve interconnection and injection ability in Minnesota. And we don't have any timeline right now on when those lines might be carried out. So my basic message is that in order to preserve the renewable jobs and grow the economic benefit of clean energy in Minnesota, we just need to figure out how to do this faster. I've just got some quick bullets. Other people are going to probably give you more detail on how to move forward. But my quick bullets are, first of all, CapEx 2020 really worked. It brought more than 3,500 megawatts of new renewables serving Minnesota customers between Minnesota and the Dakotas. And it can work again. And actually, CapEx Utilities have formed an organization, and they will, they're looking at things, but they're not doing any active planning right now in terms of what we can make happen. And we think that the legislature or the Public Utilities Commission could require those transmission owners to develop that kind of expansion plan, to try to bring and interconnect more renewables by 2030, which is kind of a critical date. Xcel will no doubt talk about their resource plan that also has some solutions to speed that up. One of the great things that the Public Utility Commission did when they approved most of those CapEx lines is they allowed Xcel to build them for double circuiting, which means right now they just have one wire hanging off of them, but there's capability on the tower to hang a second wire. That could be part of this, but it's not a solution in and of itself. To bring more power into Minnesota on those CapEx lines, you also need some outlet to the east when the Minnesota lines are not, or the Minnesota load is not capable of handling that additional capability. So, and one of the ideas that I actually think is something seriously considered is providing incentives to utilities to construct and own new transmission, particularly to construct and own new transmission that will interconnect clean energy. And one of the ways that we can do it, one of the most obvious ways is a bonus rate of return in order to get them to invest in new transmission that will bring benefits to Minnesota customers and Minnesota employment. And also look into levering federal infrastructure dollars where possible. The infrastructure bill was passed. There is some money in it for transmission. I can't comment right now on the details of how you get that. It doesn't look like it's going to be easy, not like getting federal money from the federal money is ever easy, but that's something else that could be examined. So that is the conclusion of my remarks. And hopefully you get a lot of good information today.
Thank you so much, Ms. Engelking. Our last speaker in this first segment is Commissioner Joe Sullivan with the Public Utilities Commission. Welcome back to the committee, Commissioner Sullivan. You're on mute, Commissioner Sullivan.
Thank you, Chair Long. I'm gonna pull my presentation up here. Just give me a second. That's exactly what I didn't want to do. Sorry about this.
We're looking at your email right now, so you might want to.
You are.
Pull up here. There we go.
Okay. I really seem to struggle with this. I used to be much better, I feel. Sorry, everybody. You have to suffer through this. You're just looking at my, okay. I think I know what I did. There we go.
You can see it now. You might want to change the display to presentation mode.
Isn't it in this presentation mode?
Just flip it over. We're looking at your notes view. You go on display settings.
Display.
There you go. Perfect.
I'm sorry. Well, thank you, Chair Long and members of that committee. My name is Joe Sullivan. I'm a commissioner on the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I am the Minnesota representative to the organization of MISO States, which is an organization of regulators throughout the mid-continent that works on MISO issues and transmission issues in particular. So it's good to be here and to see everybody in this, to see the interest in this really important issue. So the first thing I'd like to do is really kind of lay the ground, the foundation here that, and I wanted to be very clear that MISO membership and SPP membership, but MISO membership in particular, is very beneficial for Minnesota. MISO and other RTOs, which MISO is an RTO. They were established by FERC Order 2000 in the late 90s to drive competition and increase reliability. you know, through regional sharing of services. The purpose of MISO and RTOs in general is to plan for and operate transmission infrastructure. And the benefits to Minnesota, to be very specific, we have access to a much larger power market. We have a much more diverse power supply. And consequently, this lowers wholesale energy prices and it lowers our capacity and reliability costs. These are significant benefits that are that go beyond being able to increase development and economic opportunities for Minnesota. It goes straight to Minnesotans' bills. Minnesota's energy bills today are hundreds of millions of dollars lower because of MISO. And I just want to level set and make sure that that's very clear, that this is a really important organization. And we need to make sure that not only is it continuing to deliver these benefits, but that it's doing better. And I think that that's an important thing that I wanted to stress, is that we need MISO in terms of planning, we need more and better planning. Problem right now is that MISO over the last decade has gotten significantly bigger. That's a good thing. It gives us access to larger markets, and that's a good thing. But it has bogged down the transmission planning process. Consequently, transmission planning and build out has not kept pace with needs. Ms. Engelking, kind of spelled it out, I think, perfectly. You know, there is a lack of planning and build out has led us to today, where interconnection costs are extremely high, and that forces projects out. And you also heard that lack of transmission capacity along the border between MISO and SPP, that's referred to as the SEAM, is limited and creates projects problems for projects in Minnesota. Now, over the last 2 years, with a lot of work that's gone in from the Walls administration, from administrations throughout the footprint, throughout MISO, through regulators, MISO has gotten moving on the LRTP, and you'll hear Mr. Tullo talk more about this, the long-range transmission planning process. And then also on the SEAM, there's the JTIQ, which is another study that is looking at these problems. So things are moving directionally in the right direction. We've got a long way to go, but this is good that we're moving in these directions. But the concept, what's happened since we don't have transmission capacity today, and what I want to focus your attention on is the pending column here. 632 megawatts of wind, 180 megawatts of solar. That's pending, meaning that the Minnesota Commission has issued a final order on that. Those are projects that are fully permitted. We have spent significant amount of time with communities doing public hearings. We've spent significant amount of time with state resources permitting and getting those projects, making sure that they're needed, that they're consistent with resource plans or that there are PPAs. And we've utilized a lot of time, and they're permitted and ready to go. So we have more than 800 megawatts right now in Minnesota that's stalled. It's ready. They could be turning dirt right now and creating thousands of jobs throughout Minnesota, but they're stalled out because they don't have access to transmission. You see the permit in progress. Those are projects that we're working on right now, which also will be stalled. So very significant amount of state resources have gone in, and we're kind of in cold storage right now, and we've done a lot of the work, and that's maximally annoying, considering all of the things that this agency has to do, the commission has to do, that we've spent all this time and we're waiting. I want to stress, and I do think this is critically important, that we talk about transmission, and you hear a lot from renewable developers, and I think clean energy development is absolutely critical. But the reason that RTOs and MISO were set up is to help utilities and states be more efficient. And they were set up so that all utility services could be more efficient and better. So when I think about Minnesota's long-term energy planning goals being harder to achieve with minimal transmission capacity. I'm not just thinking about renewable development. I'm thinking about it's going to be harder to, you know, to ensure efficient utility service, reliable and safe service that comes with capacity. That's harder to do too. Access or fair and reasonable rates, access to clean energy, low wholesale electric utility prices, implementation of resource plans. All of these are harder to achieve if we don't have access to transmission. You know, the Minnesota Commission has been doing a lot in terms of, I would call it low-hanging fruit. You know, we are trying to make better use of existing interconnections through net zero interconnections, where you have a renewable facility that pairs up with an existing natural gas facility that utilizes the interconnection, you know, 5% of the time. The renewable facility can utilize it a little bit more, and they can come together and utilize the interconnection. That's great. We are, you know, approving when and interested when utilities and developers bring us that. Another thing we're doing is repowering existing wind facilities, you know, utilizing the old 100 megawatt interconnection and putting, you know, new turbines that are, you know, 30 or 40% more efficient, getting more power out of them. That's great. We're doing a lot of repowering. And then just recently, just actually on Tuesday, the commission has approved Xcel to move forward with large grid tie lines that tie into the Becker interconnection and then also the King interconnection. That's going to enable thousands of megawatts of new renewables on those lines. And that's all great. But I want to point out that this is low-hanging fruit. This is the stuff that we're doing that's important to maximize what we've got today. But we absolutely, it is absolutely critical that MISO is able to, you know, push through and get additional transmission planned, and then we can get going constructing it and getting more on the getting more transmission built. That's absolutely critical. So I with that, I'm glad to take questions and thanks for your time.
Thank you, Commissioner Sullivan. I see we have three questions, members. If we could keep them very brief, I would appreciate it, so we can keep moving and make sure we get to hear from everybody today. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I got a question and then just a quick follow-up. Does alternative energy, solar and wind, provide base load electricity like natural gas, hydro, nuclear, or clean coal?
Commissioner Sullivan.
Yes or no question answer.
Thank you for that question. Representative Grunhagen, I think the answer to that question is, you know, in MISO, there are thousands of generators. There are thousands of generators in MISO, and all of those generators provide power to your house and to industry and to our businesses in Minnesota, 24, hours a day, 365 days a year. So what provides you that baseload is the transmission system and the distribution system. No one power plant do you count on for 100% of your power. So I think that's the most important point, is that it's the transmission system and the grid that provides you reliable power.
Representative Grunhagen, you said you had a quick follow-up.
Yeah, a quick follow-up. All of my research on this, and I have spent quite a few years, shows that they are not baseload electricity, and therefore they undermine the stability of the grid. They don't enhance it. And we see that in California, Texas, ad nauseum, that when we have severe weather events, wind and solar fail us and make us less reliable. And it also skyrockets our price of electricity. So I would appreciate if we would vote this proposal down. Thank you, Mr.
There's no proposal we're voting on today, Representative Hagan, but I'll take that as a comment. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question to Mr. Sullivan. Is there a current shortage of electricity on the grid in Minnesota?
Commissioner Sullivan.
Is there a current? No, there's no shortage of electricity on the grid in Minnesota.
Representative Swazinski.
So if there's not a shortage of electricity in Minnesota, Why do we need to, I think the reason why it's holding a lot of these renewable projects is because it's not needed. It's excess energy. It's looking to replace baseload energy. And I've read estimates that it's going to cost over $200 billion to ratepayers to kind of fulfill this dream just in the infrastructure for transmission. Is that number fairly accurate?
Commissioner Sullivan. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Swedzinski. I'm not sure what number you're referring to. I guess what I would say to that is that the electric system is the largest machine in the world, and it's constantly changing, and new facilities are coming on and old facilities are dropping off. You know, you have power plants that are on the system that are 60 years old, and because of the way that they operate, they're just more expensive. They're less efficient, and those come off, and then we put new stuff on. And that's the way the system is being transitioned, is old stuff is coming off and new stuff is coming on.
So electricity prices go
down. Representative real quick, and then we'll have to move on. Sounded like the question was if electricity prices are coming down in the future. Commissioner Sullivan.
Well, if as we transition to resources that do not have a fuel component, so when you pay your bill, your electric bill, you pay a fuel component, you pay a base rate component, which is for all the CapEx utility spend, and then you pay for riders. And it's about a third, a third, a third. And as the fuel component drops off because you're putting resources on that do not have a fuel component, then people will pay less in their bill.
Representative Christensen, and then we'll have to move on to the second panel.
Okay, I'll try to be quick here. This is for Ms. Engelking. And I'm just trying, you had mentioned that it takes 10 years to develop, to permit, to construct projects. What is permitting the big time problem here, or what, which one of those things really makes 10 years?
The first thing is the routing of the line, which is that whoever's building the line needs to go out and get all the right of way that they need to get the line. And we try to do that. Even the utilities try to do that as much on a voluntary basis as possible. If they need to condemn parts of that line, they will have to go to court, which takes even a little longer. And they need, under Minnesota law, they need to provide two potential routes for the line. So the first thing is just getting that land along the route. And then they have to go in and get the route approved by the Public Utilities Commission, both for need and for the route, which it can also take a lot of time. I think there are several transmission lines that have taken up to 3 years to permit at the Public Utilities Commission. And construction is not fast either. Some of the utilities could probably tell you more about how long it takes to construct.
Thank you, Ms. Engelken.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. Next, we are going to hear from our second segment, which is on the solutions to some of these problems that we covered in our first segment. And first, we will hear from Brian Tello, who is the Executive Director of External Affairs for MISO, the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator, and Aubrey Johnson, the Executive Director for Systems Planning. Welcome both of you to the committee.
Very good. Thank you, Chair Long. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you great.
All right, very good. Good morning. I'm Brian Tello, the Executive Director of External Affairs at MISO. And I'm joined by Aubrey Johnson, Executive Director of System Planning. If I could ask Julie, our assistant, to pull up the screen and the presentation we'll be going through, that would be great. Thank you, Julie. Before we go to the first page, let me just say we appreciate the opportunity to speak today because part of our role as the independent regional grid operator is to serve as a resource to policymakers like yourselves. Aubrey's going to be focusing on our long-range transmission planning efforts, but I'll kick us off with a little bit of context. If you could start on the next page, Julie. MISO is an independent nonprofit organization, and our primary objectives are reliability and low cost for consumers. We have a transparent and open stakeholder process, which includes not just utilities, but also state regulators, consumer and environmental advocates, customers, marketers, and even the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, to name a few. Membership in MISO is voluntary. Our members can leave us if we're not adding value, and appreciate Commissioner Sullivan's comments around that. I won't go through the stats on the left here, but suffice to say, MISO is very big. And that scale and the diversity that and the reach that it brings are why we exist. MISO's position in the middle of the eastern power grid means we are at a crossroads of sorts. Minnesota is at a crossroads for the entire eastern grid. And we are well positioned to help move power across that grid. This was illustrated a year ago today, exactly, by Winter Storm Uri, which was bearing down on the center of the country 1 year ago. MISO's reach and strong transmission connections with our eastern neighbors were critical in getting us and our western neighbors through that storm. If we didn't have the transmission that we had today, that could have been a much worse event, and we're going to need more going forward. Next page, please, Julie. So what does MISO do, actually? First, we are the reliability coordinators that conduct efficient wholesale power markets, dispatching the most efficient generators and moving power around the grid every minute of the day, 24/7. Some of you on the committee have been to visit our Egan Control Center, which is similar to the picture on the right. There's somewhat like an air traffic control center, if you would, for the grid. Again, operating all the time. And then the second big area of what MISO does is transmission planning, and Aubrey will dive into that if we could go to the next page. Before Aubrey starts, I just wanted to give a little context on what's driving this, and it really is the fleet transition that we're seeing. So MISO doesn't own or plan or do anything with generation resources, but we have to react to them and where they're headed and where our states are headed with them. The chart we have in front of you just shows some of those trends that we're seeing in the market that are driving the long-range transmission planning. In 2005, MISO was 75% coal with no renewables. In 2020, coal was down to about a third, and renewables were growing rapidly. By the time we get, when we look at it in the future, we see coal approaching less than 10%, not going away, but certainly decreasing the amount of energy generated, and renewables approaching 40 and 50% in some scenarios. The trends we're observing are universal, perhaps. What we're seeing is the accelerated retirement of traditional resources. So we're as Commissioner Sullivan mentioned, we're seeing a lot of retirements. These assets are in some cases very old, so they need to be replaced anyway. But we're also seeing increasing demand, customer demand for renewables, and demand by our members. We're seeing some electrification already, and expect more of it. This industry hasn't grown demand for a decade, but with electrification, we will need to be providing more energy. What that means is we're going to have to add a lot of generation assets to the grid one way or the other. We're also seeing an increasing amount of extreme events. This transition is a challenge we're facing head on. We call it the reliability imperative, ensuring reliability and affordability through the transition. And our long-range transmission planning effort is a key part of that effort. The next page, if we could, Julie, is just a reminder, and this was already mentioned earlier by at least one speaker, about the MVP projects. Because what we're doing now is very much informed by that. More than a decade ago, the MISO states successfully collaborated to create the multi-value project portfolio. The MVPs are 17 major transmission projects across the footprint designed to reduce congestion, meet early renewable portfolio standards set by state statute. This MVP story helps inform how we're approaching the current challenges. The key takeaway from that effort was this is a multi-state effort. And this is very complex, and it requires regional cooperation to get this done, multi-states getting together. This isn't something Minnesota can do alone, but certainly we have to collaborate on an inter and intra-state basis. Today, the challenges we face are even bigger with this massive fleet transition that's underway, but collectively, we've done it before. We can do it again. So now Aubrey is going to explain just how we're going about that. We can turn it over to Aubrey.
Yep. Thank you, Brian. And Julie, if you could go to the next page, please. Chair Long and committee, thank you again. My name is Aubrey Johnston. As Brian mentioned, I'm the Executive Director of System Planning and Competitive Transmission here with MISO. My team is responsible for all aspects of transmission planning in the MISO region. What you're seeing here today, I want to talk a little bit about that overall planning process, a little bit of the why behind how we develop our annual transmission plan and or big initiatives like long-range transmission planning, and spend a little bit of time talking about our efforts with long-range transmission planning. But this slide here, we really break it down to look at the four types of transmission planning that generally occur within the MISO footprint. If we look at the interconnection planning, which we've heard a lot about already earlier today, this is something that's cyclical. It follows the different interconnection queue opportunities that we open annually, depending upon what those overall system needs are. And so one of the things that we'd share also is that our studies are currently up to date relative to analyzing what's in our queue. But as mentioned before, the challenge really here is some of the delays we're seeing with affected system studies from some of our neighbors, both SPP and PJM. And so again, Brian has talked about earlier the need for collaboration. That actually takes place well within interconnection planning as well. We also conduct reliability planning. This is an annual effort that takes approximately 18 months and is basically recognized as part of our MISO transmission expansion plan that's approved by Board of Directors every year in December. This is the area where we are really focused on baseline reliability. It is the things that we have to do to keep the lights on and ensure that all of the different NERC standards are being met. We also have on a periodic basis, we conduct market efficiency planning. So this would be a study to look at where their congestion, where's their historic congestion that could be alleviated and help the market operate better by implementing a different type of transmission project that will relieve that. And then periodically, again, we focus and move forward with what we're doing today, which is our long-range transmission planning effort. This is really what we think about as a top-down or full value-based planning process, where we're looking at all aspects of transmission and trying to move forward with the most holistic overall plan that we can come up with to support the transmission needs of the region. Next slide, please, Julie. With each transmission plan that's developed, we really have to accomplish three things. We have to always make sure that we have aligned interest. Again, as Commissioner Sullivan has talked about, the overall MISO footprint has grown tremendously, and working across the footprint to ensure that in all cases, we have aligned interests both locally, sub-regionally, and regionally is a significant portion of us trying to work to ensure that as we're developing transmission plans, they have full support. Next, we have to have a robust business case. This becomes the justification for the transmission investment that's needed to carry forward to support efforts within the region. This is where we make sure that the benefits that we expect to come from the investment in transmission outweigh that overall cost in an effort to make sure that we're developing a no regrets project. And then finally, we have to have an appropriate cost allocation mechanism. Without an appropriate cost allocation mechanism, you don't have a way to ensure that costs are aligned roughly commensurate with where the benefits are. And as we talk about some of the challenges we've had with the long range transmission planning effort we have underway, part of that is ensuring that we have an appropriate cost allocation methodology to support that. Julie, if we could move to the next slide, please. As we begin to talk about our long-range transmission plan, it's important to anchor ourselves around how we got there. Part of this is the effort to have a scenario-based planning process. Within MISO, we do this by the development of futures. This was a 18-month-long process that culminated in October 2020, where we work with stakeholders to establish what are some of the state needs, what are the transmission owner needs, what are we seeing from a policy perspective, and we develop three futures that we believe are robust enough to allow us to conduct scenario planning to build future transmission off of. No specific future or no specific plan can really be developed. So what we look at is trying to ensure that we have a range of reasonable opportunities, a range of reasonable outcomes that we can plan for and execute on to deliver that transmission transmission roadmap, that transmission plan. Our focus has really been on Future One, which basically would deliver 63% in carbon emissions from the 2005 levels and would deliver approximately 26% renewable penetration throughout our footprint. As we move to Future Two or Future Three, those futures see increases in decarbonization, also driven by electrification, and also a significant increase in the generating resources that would come online. Julie, if we could go to the next slide, please. This is just another look at those futures and that overall futures makeup and what those futures are seeking to accomplish. Again, we're focused on Future One. What you're seeing here is the potential energy mix that would come out of this resource portfolio change. The resource portfolio change is very well underway. We noticed that, again, we can reference some of the changes that are coming with the XL IRP. Brian also talked about the reduction in carbon emissions and coal fleet from 2005 through 2020. And so we can very much see that our fleet evolution is very much underway as we speak today. We can also note that when we developed the futures in 2020, we've seen additional announcements from both states and member utilities that also drive to say that we're probably looking at and operating in a scenario somewhere between our Future One and our Future Two. The big thing here is to recognize the significant additions that are required, as well as the amount of retirements that we expect to take place across the overall MISO footprint. Next slide, please, Julie. As we think about all of the changes that are going on throughout the overall resource mix and the bulk electric system, one of the things that we are working on and our challenge is how to best optimize that. We've used this slide for illustrative purposes to really describe how we believe our long-range transmission planning effort is seeking to achieve the total minimum cost, the least amount of transmission and the least amount of generation necessary to achieve the resource portfolio change that's contemplated by our states and members. If we were to generate more electricity locally, we put more resources locally closer to the loads, you'd lower your overall transmission costs. If we chose to put those resources closer to where they have the highest capacity, you'd lower your generation costs, but you'd increase your transmission costs. Recognizing that all states have the responsibility around siting as well as their overall IRP and resource mix, our goal is to help create the opportunity to show where all of those can be optimized so that we have the least amount of transmission and the least amount of generation. Finally, last slide, please, Julie. We've talked a lot about this overall long-range transmission plan that we're working on. If you'll look at the map, you'll also see, and I would say the discussion where our original thoughts were, we had hoped to or expected to complete this plan in December of 2021. Our efforts now lean towards having our board of directors approve a portfolio of projects in June of 2022. I can just say that this has been a very complex effort, just as the MVP effort took approximately 4 years. We're doing more in about 2 years than that took place during that time frame as well, too, with a larger footprint with the addition of the southern part of that. This map shows the lines where you see the solid red lines are projects that we feel very confident in having the business case and the benefits to support recommending those projects. The projects with the red and black dotting in them are projects that we're working on and under further development that we expect to also see be included in this first set of projects that we will recommend to the board. This is a very iterative process that's very dynamic. We will, by the end of this month, when we hold our next workshop, probably see changes within this map as we the analysis continues to develop and move forward. Obviously, there are stakeholders who would certainly expect us to like for us to move faster, but we are moving as fast as we possibly can based upon the complexity, the coordination, and the need to ensure that our efforts are to deliver the least regrets project. And so, Chair Long, that's the end of our prepared remarks.
Thank you so much. We have two other presenters, and then we'll take questions. First, we are going to hear from Preeti Patel, the Chief Transmission Officer for Great River Energy. Welcome to the committee.
Great. Well, thank you so much. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Preeti Patel, and I'm the Vice President and Chief Transmission Officer for Great River Energy, which is a generation and transmission cooperative that's owned by our 28-member distribution cooperatives. And together with our members, we serve around 1.7 million Minnesotans across two-thirds of the geographical area of the state. So I want to thank the committee for the invitation to be here and to talk about transmission at a time that I think we would all agree is exciting, it's challenging. It's a time that also, frankly, requires great responsibility from all of us. I do appreciate the comments by MISO, as well as some of the very real issues that were articulated by the earlier presenters. I would like to provide a perspective that needs to be on our collective minds when it comes to transmission. It's one that's fundamental to Great River Energy, and that is affordability. Great River Energy supports the need for regional transmission. I'll say that at the outset. As a not-for-profit cooperative, we are laser-focused on reliability, and this is driven in large part by the location of our member cooperatives. We are mostly rural, we're in low-density areas, we serve some of the lowest-income counties in the state. We support MISO's long-range transmission planning process. We've been participating in that process for a very long time, and the portfolio of projects that Mr. Johnson was just outlining are critical. Those projects could cost anywhere between $10 to $20 billion, and whatever it is, it will be the largest transmission build-out in MISO's history. This is what MISO expects to approve sometime this year, part of that portfolio, and that'll be the tip of the iceberg. When it's all said and done over the next few decades, you know, based on past presentations by MISO that we have seen, the numbers could move up toward $90 billion, $90 to $100 billion. So that leads to my main point, that it's important that we collectively manage this energy transition carefully, keeping a laser focus on affordability to all Minnesotans. The regional transmission that's needed for this transition cannot be built on the backs of public power customers or any other community of customers. So with the massive changes that we see on the horizon, the speed that's required, the urgency, we need to remain focused on some public protections to make sure that affordability remains a priority too. Electric customers in Minnesota will pay for a share of that $10 to $20 billion portfolio and eventually all the portfolios that come after. So under the MISO rules of the road, all regional transmission is paid for by all MISO transmission users based on energy usage, because there are broad benefits to the entire region from the projects that Mr. Johnson was showing. So it's only fair that everyone shares in paying for that. We don't object to that. But the only way a utility can offset those regional transmission costs is if they get an opportunity to own transmission and earn revenue on that transmission. And that's where Minnesota's rules of the road come in. So right now, when it comes to owning regional transmission, the law in Minnesota incentivizes utilities to take a winner-takes-all approach. The law doesn't incentivize more inclusive joint investment, as it needs to make sure that we don't make some Minnesotans bigger cost takers than others. And our analysis is showing that more than not, customers of public power are taking on an unfair burden of regional transmission, while everyone in the region gets the same broad benefits. And the current statute in Minnesota restricts project ownership and revenue to oftentimes a few utilities, And the impact of this is that there are many utilities like GRE that can't earn to mitigate their costs of regional transmission to the detriment of their customers. So without being able to earn a fair share of revenue, we estimate this massive build out for GRE at least could amount to a double digit percent increase to our transmission rate starting in 10 years. So as this occurs, this is occurring as MISO has approved tranche one, which we're expecting will be one tenth of its total portfolio of projects that it's expecting to come after this year. So consider the affordability impact when 100% of the portfolios are approved and utilities aren't afforded or have a limited or a zero investment opportunity. So that leads me to my final point, and that is that GRE is introducing legislation so that we can modify the existing law and incentivize fairer and broader investment opportunities for all utilities so we can mitigate collectively the regional transmission costs for our customers. The bill we are introducing enables and incentivizes utilities to work out a fair and reasonable ownership agreement to protect their collective customers. And only if we can't come to an agreement is the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission involved to solve the dispute. So I do appreciate Ms. Engelking's call out as to how well the CapEx utilities worked for Minnesota in the past. Again, we support regional transmission and we support the efforts by MISO, but in Minnesota, we need to make sure that the rules for owning transmission incentivize the right behavior with a goal toward affordability for all Minnesotans. So thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you so much. Next, we will be hearing from Michael Lamb, who is the Senior VP for Transmission with Xcel Energy. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to be here. And I welcome the opportunity to offer my comments on solutions. In a nutshell, and I think you're going to see a lot of alignment today, in a nutshell, a solution is more grid in a timely way, in a timely fashion. Xcel's made a commitment to achieving an 80% carbon reduction by 2030, and we're well on our way to achieving that, and a stated goal of achieving a 100% carbon-free system by 2050. This will be accomplished by a lot of different efforts. Maintenance of efficient carbon-free nuclear plants, closing of coal units, increasing solar and wind, reliance on natural gas or other fuels that are dispatchable in the long term to maintain reliability with intermittent renewable energy sources, incorporation of new technologies and storage as they become economically and commercially viable. But fundamentally, it takes more grid, as most of my predecessors have talked about this morning. And fundamentally, it requires access to long duration dispatchable energy on our worst day. And that worst day being when the solar and wind aren't available. Meeting these clean energy commitments requires Xcel Energy and all other utilities for that matter to plan and model the system very effectively. You've heard planning and modeling come up already multiple times this morning. I think we're actively planning together and with MISO. I think that's not the roadblock, but it's a really key piece. Mr. Johnson talked about what MISO does on the planning front. I'd like to frame it just a little bit different, more for educational purposes. There are three fundamental planning focuses that an Xcel Energy takes on. One is real-time planning. It happens every 3 to 5 minutes. It's anticipating the next big impact on the grid and allowing us to mitigate that risk to keep the lights on in effect. Power flow studies and modeling is really important. That's taking into consideration where the load is, where the generation is, and where the constraints are on the grid, and most importantly, how to address those constraints. And then finally, modeling and planning around stability of the grid, which is similar to power flow, but much more complicated because it also takes into consideration voltage and frequency. And really, that is about anticipating what happens to the grid when there's a major fault, when there's a major unplanned event, and making sure we can keep it up and running. As you've already heard, our system is interconnected with MISO, and MISO helps all interconnected utilities with resilience and with access to an efficient market. In addition to the grid planning we perform, we work closely with MISO and other utilities, actually, with modeling, but MISO is focused on a broader, more region basis and higher voltage aspects of the grid. Our XL-specific modeling is fully integrated with MISO's to ensure the optimal solutions are identified for our customers and all customers throughout the Upper Midwest. And in pursuit of the objectives of clean energy commitments, delivering lowest cost energy to our customers, and taking full advantage of a broad market to help ensure resource adequacy and reliability. The modeling involves very complex algorithms and computing power. In general, the models take into consideration hundreds of thousands of components and thousands of scenarios. Just as an example, for a typical stability power flow study, you can hit the button and the model might churn for 1 to 3 days before results are produced. At our core and beyond modeling and planning, we are focused on operational excellence. While always trying to get better, I think it's fair to say we excel at designing, engineering, and building grid infrastructure. In addition, I think it's fair to say we excel at siting and permitting. That's been brought up before. We're very focused on that long pole in the tent once a project is approved, at ensuring extensive community and landowner involvement. And we're proud of our track record. We led the CapEx 2020 has been brought up. We led the development and implementation of the CapEx 2030 projects, including permitting and siting of the 345 kV St. Cloud Fargo Monticello line, as well as the Rochester Hampton Lacrosse lines, and recently partnered with ITC Midwest to complete the Huntley Wilmarth project. All of these helped with reliability, and all of them helped with access to clean, renewable energy, and were successfully executed safely. Additionally, we recently rebuilt, the Helena Scott County 345 kV line. Again, that line, that rebuild helped increase reliability and increase access to renewable energy. We have an incentive to keep costs low, as Priti just talked about. Cost is so important, affordability is so important. And we use competitive bidding processes for all components of our transmission buildouts greater than $50,000. Our costs are overseen, as many of you know, by the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission, and our customers only pay for costs that the commission approves. Part of the solution is more grid in a timely fashion, and it's completely aligned with our commitment to build and maintain a grid that delivers clean energy to our customers reliably, safely, and at a low cost. We work with many stakeholders, many of the people on the call in this meeting today, to accomplish this. We are looking forward to working with the legislature on the challenges and opportunities presented by this commitment. Thank you again, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to share some of my thoughts with you this morning.
Thank you so much. Members, we have until about 11:40 for questions for this panel, and we'll have to move to the third panel. I'd just like to start with a question for Mr. Johnson. Senator Senjamin and I sent a letter over the summer, and we got a very thoughtful response back from John Baer about the challenges that we're facing in Minnesota on transmission. And I think we heard a number of those challenges in our testimony today for some of the canceled projects or ones that aren't getting built. So my question is, with the long-range transmission planning process, how much interconnection capacity do you expect this to bring to Minnesota? When do you expect the first lines to be in service? And when we're looking at the carbon goals we've set as a state, do you feel like these projects will help us achieve our goals?
Thank you, Chair Long. Let me work our way backwards through those questions. I think certainly the effort that MISO and the Minnesota utilities are putting forth will do a lot to help achieve the goals that Minnesota has set relative to lowering carbon emissions. I think at this point in time, it's a little bit early for us to be able to get to determining what kind of megawatt enablement will happen both in Minnesota and across the footprint, because we're still working on finalizing what that portfolio is. So as we get closer to that within the next several weeks, happy to try to report back to you and the committee about what we expect that to be.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I'd appreciate that. And as we know, some of these buildouts will take many years. And I think Commissioner Sullivan highlighted the challenge we're facing right now with the projects looking to interconnect. What can be done to reduce some of the interconnection costs and just speed interconnection for projects right now while we're waiting for the long-term process to play out?
Let me answer that by also trying to complete part of your previous question, which is a lot of what we're doing with the long-range transmission planning effort is taking advantage of things we're done with part of the CapEx work. So where there were spare positions open, those are things that are very much in play for where we expect to move forward with. So in those particular cases where we're able to utilize spare positions, existing right-of-way, those will be all things will shorten that overall cycle that would take for transmission projects to come into play. We're also very much working on working with our interconnection queue process. We made a filing back in December of last year to shorten the time that we negotiate generator interconnection agreements to approximately 150 days, if I recall correctly. And so that whole cycle is now moving to be completed within 1 year. And then finally, the work that we've also done with this joint targeted interconnection queue study with SPP, as we're able to determine an effective cost allocation there, that will also do a lot to open up the overall highways, if you will, that will improve and lower some of the costs associated with effective system studies, and therefore increase the ability to have more renewables come online in the near term rather than a longer term.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think Mr. Aubrey has already addressed this in the question, frankly, that you asked. And it was really about decarbonization and the long range transmission planning. And so I appreciate the connection there. And just I think that's really the point. So appreciate the connection on that.
Thank you, Representative Akam. Representative Stevenson.
thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question for MISO is, you know, what is happening right now in an effort to speed up the interconnection requests? And maybe a follow-up question is there anything the legislature could be doing to help the process of speeding up those interconnection requests and permitting and construction of transmission lines?
Mr. Johnson.
Sure. Thank you for your question. A couple of things. As I mentioned, we've already made a FERC filing to that we expect to reduce the overall cycle time to process the batches of interconnection requests down to within a year cycle time, right, to lower the generator interconnection agreement time to a year. The other thing, we've already made reforms that require more deposits, more certainty, if you will, for projects that are put into the interconnection queue. Those are things that we expect to have that will help with the number of withdrawals, that they would happen sooner rather than later. Which again is part of the things that help them with the restudy process. So I think we've effected many reforms that we believe improve that process. We have to continue to let those reforms take effect. And then we've also done this part where we've done a generator replacement filing and also allowing people to use additional surplus interconnection rights there as well. Also something that XL is also taking advantage of with some of their rights relative to the Sherco plant. So those are things that we think are already beneficial there. The biggest challenge we have is our getting the affected system studies done by our neighbors faster.
Representative Stevenson? Okay. Representative Bowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have two questions, and we'll see if I have time for the second one. First one is really applicable for today's discussion. Second is more district specific, so I can take that offline if I need to. But for the first question, I keep hearing that there's kind of a magical sweet spot when it comes to renewables of maybe 60, 65, 70%. And anything above that will start to provide perhaps more instability on the grid. And I'm wondering, is that true? And is it because of kind of the cyclic nature of renewables today? Or is it more because of shortcomings in the grid itself?
Are you directing that towards anyone in particular?
Anyone who wants to take it. Thank you.
Okay.
Looks like Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Rep. It sounds like that's coming to me, and I'd offer my colleagues to jump in on this as well also. So MISO has done some work with our renewable integration impact assessment, that actually start to show that over 30% penetration across the entire footprint, you start to see significant issues with the grid. That's primarily driven because when you have that level of renewable penetration across the grid, it means that you have much higher levels of penetration within certain areas of the grid. And what the biggest change or the biggest difference that I think you would see where we see challenges is really because the resource mix is different. And the attributes that are part of the energy delivered by renewable resources is different. And so therefore, we have to think about different ways to support that, whether it's frequency, whether it's fast ramp, whether it's other forms of inertia that are already part of our existing dispatchable resource fleet, and also other things like inverters and all. So I think, sir, it's not a one size fits all. It's actually recognizing that the value that we get also of the diversity, meaning that you can have more sunlight in the western part of the footprint than you do in the eastern footprint. You may have wind at different areas. And so that's the importance of the transmission system being able to transfer between the various issues. And again, this gets back a lot to some of the issues that Mr. Lamb raised relative to stability on the grid and ensuring that we have the supporting resources on the grid to make sure it all works well.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. So we're going to have to move to our third panel, Representative Mecklen, Representative Franz, and you'll be top of the list for our third set of questions. And I suspect our panelists will be sticking around. So next we are hearing from Kevin Franis, who's the campaign director for LIUNA. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Long, and committee members for the opportunity. My name is Kevin Pranis. I'm a marketing manager for LIUNA Minnesota in North Dakota, a union of more than 12,000 proud construction laborers who build and maintain our state's transportation, water, energy, and building infrastructure. We call ourselves Minnesota's Infrastructure Union, and energy is a critical component of the work we do. LIUNA began to focus on transmission when we realized the availability of transmission was often the single most important determinant of whether members work or don't in areas of greater Minnesota, where utility scale wind and solar development are a significant source of construction employment. As many of you know, our members worked hard to ensure that large wind and solar projects create high quality jobs and economic opportunity that goes to local workers and communities. And it took a couple years with help from friends, through deep engagement with clean energy and utility industries, LIUNA, together with building trades brothers and sisters, were able to substantially increase employment of local workers on renewable energy projects from under 10% to 60 to 70%. The unfortunate irony, however, was that around 2019, when we'd finally persuaded industry to prioritize local workforce and our members were looking forward to helping build a clean energy economy, we hit a transmission wall. Over the next year, we saw dozens of wind and solar projects that would have created thousands of family-supporting jobs canceled, tabled, or substantially delayed. While we were still able to put hundreds of members to work on long-planned projects with good transmission queue positions, the future did not look promising, and we wondered if we had wasted this effort. Since then, the outlook's improved substantially because utilities and clean energy developers came up with creative solutions to maximize throughput on our current grid. These solutions are paving the way for addition of thousands of megawatts of new wind and solar. First, repowering existing wind facilities with more technology that's more advanced and more efficient to maximize output. I'd say Xcel in particular identified about 1,000 megawatts worth of beneficial repowering projects that put members to work, helped reduce costs for customers, and made use of existing sites and existing equipment and transmission. Second, through the use of net zero interconnections, allow complementary resources to share the same interconnection point. So Great River Energy, for example, made creative use of transmission that supports peaking plants, which tend to run as a backup and in periods of high demand, to add wind onto those same interconnections because it tends to produce at night. So by sharing those interconnections, able to add hundreds of megawatts of wind that again is creating high quality jobs in Minnesota, as well as reducing costs for ratepayers. And third, reuse of transmission facilities and interconnection rights associated with retiring conventional power plants. In the past year, all of Minnesota's investor-owned utilities have proposed substantial investments in solar sited around retiring plants, which not only eases transmission constraints, but provides an opportunity to reinvest in the workforce and communities that have helped to keep the lights on for all these years. Xcel, with the support of the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission and a broad range of stakeholders, is now planning to take this interconnection reuse a big step forward by building what they've referred to as an extension cord that would bring renewable energy all the way from Southwest Minnesota, you know, and other areas east to the King plant and interconnected at retiring coal plants. This is a visionary plan that will unlock substantial new transmission and substantial economic opportunity. Now, it's really been creative and visionary work on the part of the regulated and cooperative utilities and clean energy developers supported by the Public Utilities Commission is unlocking this potential and helping avoid the wall that we hit. That's the good news. The bad news is the bag of tricks is empty. And if we don't start now, we will not have transmission needed to meet growing demand for electric power as we see a rise in the use of electric vehicles and electric heating and cooling. We don't have the solutions at LIUNA, but we believe there are two steps the legislature can take. One is setting clear policy direction for where we're going so organizations like MISO can plan to make needed investment. We all understand the market is going there, and often the question is, if the market's headed there, why does the state need to do anything? I think it's to provide some certainty to MISO so MISO can make the needed transmission investments so they're ready when we need them. This is we need a clear plan. The second is we need to look at unnecessary hurdles created in the permitting process for both transmission and generation facilities. These processes are complex, but there's no reason we need to make it more difficult. Representative Stevenson will talk about a bill that takes modest but important steps in that direction while simultaneously ensuring the economic interests of local workers and communities are included in the utility planning process. And the last thing I would say that as we tried to understand how transmission works, and we are hardly the experts, the people that are on these panels are exactly the people who taught us how it works and how to navigate this in the best interest of members. So you have all the right people at the table here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Franis. I've asked Representative Stevenson if we could hold off on his bill presentation for another meeting to allow more time for questions. So we'll be moving right ahead. And our second to last speaker for us today is Beth Soholt, the Executive Director of the Clean Grid Alliance. Welcome to the committee. Beth, I think you're on mute.
I'm so sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for spending time on this important issue today. Being near the end means I get to respond to a few things that I've heard, and I'm going to kind of cut to the chase here since we're short on time. Just to reiterate again, I am Beth Soholt, the Executive Director of the Clean Grid Alliance. Some of you may know our organization as Wind on the Wires. We rebranded in 2018 because we were working on more than just wind. We really work on wind, solar, transmission, and storage issues. We have really worked since 2001 on setting the policies like the Renewable Energy Standard and on implementing to achieve those policies. I want to be very clear that a lot of the questions that were asked today about interconnection, what the legislature can do, how do we help developers timely interconnect their projects, it really boils down to the fact that we need more transmission, and we need that in a timely manner, and we need utilities in Minnesota to be jointly planning the system for the benefit of Minnesotans. So I'm going to go right to slide 5 and really just key in on my last two slides. You can read about Clean Grid Alliance and what we've done. But I just want to talk a little bit more about our transmission work. You know, we were involved in the portfolio of lines that went forward in 2011. Several of those were CapEx lines. We actually intervened in 10 of the 17 proceedings at the state level, because after they're approved by MISO, they have to go into the state permitting process. And so we intervened in 10 of those 17 cases. We are still in litigation on a transmission line that is critical to clean energy development and to reliability across the MISO footprint. MISO and others have already talked about the long-range transmission planning process and the tranche of portfolio of transmission lines that's coming out in tranche 1. It's going to be very important that those lines get approved by the MISO board and move quickly into the state regulatory process. So let me just go to the next slide and really kind of cover some of my key points here and really kind of key in on the key question I think for this committee is, what can this committee and the legislature do to help with transmission and help the state meet its goals and requirements for clean energy and carbon reduction? I've already mentioned the first one. I think that so much good work was done by CapEx. We don't quite see that level of joint planning. I think the utilities are spending a lot of time, and rightly so, working with MISO on this tranche of projects we're going to see come out. But I think there's more work to be done for the whole group of Minnesota utilities to get together and really put a plan forward that is going to benefit all Minnesotans and help the state achieve its goals. It's already been mentioned, continuing to set clear expectations on what Minnesota expects, including the timing of what we need on carbon reduction and really electrifying Minnesota's economy. You know, we don't do transmission for transmission's sake. We do it for what it enables. It enables the jobs, as Mr. Pranas talked about. It enables reliability that the utilities have talked about. And it enables Minnesotans to charge their EVs and to electrify their buildings and to have clean energy in their communities. All of that requires more grid investments. I won't spend too much time talking about the regulatory reform and the bill that is out there, but I will just say that I think one of the key things the legislature could really do is to do some appropriate and modest regulatory reforms so that in this long process of siting and routing transmission lines and in permitting new generation, Minnesota is competitive with the surrounding states. Minnesota tends to be pretty heavily regulated, and we want to do everything we can to make Minnesota a competitor with its surrounding states. And then finally, we need to look at, and MISO is already looking at existing right-of-way, we need to look at our land use issues. We need to look at, are there appropriate ways to use our roadways, working with the Minnesota Department of Transportation to locate things where appropriate. And then finally, I didn't have this bullet on here, but I would say one of the number one things I think the legislature could do is ask our state agencies who are involved in dockets at the Public Utilities Commission, whether it's new permits for clean energy or siting and routing transmission lines, the DNR, the Department of Ag, the Pollution Control Agency, and of course the Department of Commerce, are we really aligned as much as we can be to help support transmission and the energy transition that that the state needs to do? I think we have some low-hanging fruit and some prime opportunities to really do some work with our state agencies to be more supportive and more aligned to help the process be happen in a timely manner. So, Mr. Chair, I'm going to end there and look forward to any questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Soho. Our final presenter today is Michael Jacobs, who's a senior energy analyst with the Union of Concerned Scientists. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Long. I am Michael Jacobs. I represent the Union of Concerned Scientists and its members in Minnesota and across the United States. We share a mission for supporting a sustainable energy system. UCS has advocated for transmission in the upper Midwest for over 20 years. I was invited by this committee to describe transmission development for the state of New Jersey, which has legislated the procurement of offshore wind and found the transmission challenges there must be resolved for the state to meet its wind purchase requirements. New Jersey and their region have not been well served by transmission planning for offshore wind, though there are, frankly, unique challenges to putting infrastructure out at sea. the various reasons, whatever they may be, about transmission investment for offshore wind being delayed have been addressed by New Jersey legislation that directed the Utility Commission to conduct a competitive solicitation for wind transmission facilities, or let's say really transmission facilities for offshore wind. The regional grid operator in the Mid-Atlantic has rules that are explicit for a mechanism for a state to make a commitment to new transmission. The first exercise of that mechanism is currently in progress for New Jersey for the offshore wind, and 80 proposals are under review now. Now, MISO and the Midwest ISO, or I'm sorry, Mid-Continent ISO, that's two of you, MISO and Minnesota have a range of options to plan and coordinate transmission investment. A positive collaboration between MISO and Minnesota may well look different from the New Jersey specifics, but ultimately the physics are the same, and we hope that the lessons from your own past working inside the state and in the region, as well as those lessons that PJM is learning now, can serve the Minnesota economy and the growth of your energy system. And welcome your questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Jacobs. Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Chair Long. So my question goes to Michael Lamb and perhaps even Pretty, obviously on the previous one, but we've heard a lot today about low-hanging fruit and there's still a lot of it out there. We've also heard from Michael Lamb that Xcel is way ahead of schedule what they thought they would be at 10 years ago. And getting more and more renewable. So my question to Michael Lamb is this. In the last 12 months, I'm sorry, I got a dog barking. In the last 12 months, have either your two organizations ever put out a max gen warning requiring those that have backup generation that are large energy users to switch over to their backup generation or simply shut down? Has that happened in the last 12 months? That's my question.
Mr. Lamb.
I don't know for sure, so I might have to get back to you at that, back to you on that specific question. But there are lots of reasons that a max gen alert would be sent out. Most typically, for in my memory, anyways, that comes from MISO, and it's largely simply typically for us, it's when load is high and wind and solar are down. Or could be due to some planned outages on more traditional generation units in what are typically called the shoulder months, spring and fall. So it does happen. I just don't know specifically if it's happened in the last 12 months.
Representative Mecklen, do you have a follow-up?
I do have a follow-up. Thank you, Chair Long. Perhaps somebody from MISO could answer this question, because I believe it was back in June. I'm pretty much sure I heard about this. So if somebody from anybody that's still on this call from MISO, if they could answer the question for me. Thank you, Chair Long.
Mr. Johnson.
Sure. So yes, MISO has issued max gen alerts within the last 12 months. They can be done on a sub-regional basis, depending upon where the actual max gen, the load discrepancy needs are. I don't have that specifically off the top of my head if that's happened here in Minnesota relative to the question being asked. But we can certainly get that information that's available.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know our time is limited, but I have three questions, two for the MISO and one for the POC. So first for the MISO presenters, wondering if you can explain how new transmission projects are built in states like Minnesota that have a right of first refusal statute versus states that allow competition. The second question to that is, without a competitive bidding process, how do we know Minnesota ratepayers are getting the best deal on their investment?
Looks like Mr. Tello would like to take that one. No, Mr. Johnson? Okay.
Okay. Thank you for the question. So let me break it down a couple of different ways. Within MISO and in compliance with our Order 1000 requirements, projects that are cost shared are subject to competitive bidding. So that would be a project like a multi-value project, a market efficiency project. So projects that are widely cost share are subject to competitive bidding when they're not in a right of first refusal state. So that's the difference. And so we would conduct a process to determine what that project is. And then ultimately we have a selected developer process that actually ensures that takes place. In a state like Minnesota, or places where there is a right of first refusal, and again, if a project is cost shared, much like the Huntley Wilmarth project is, part of our compliance also is we monitor the overall cost of that project. And if that project exceeds the cost estimates that were set at the time of the board approval by the board, we then go into what's called variance analysis with those parties to work to bring those costs back in line and consistent with what was approved by the board of directors.
Representative Franzen, follow up, and then this will have to be our last question.
Then I will love to use my last question for the PUC.
Commissioner Sullivan had to unfortunately catch a flight, but I'm sure he'd be happy to respond to questions offline.
Can I just put it on the record for that question?
Of course. Yes.
All right. So the question that I would have for the PUC then is, since the right of first refusal was passed 10 years ago, has any Minnesota utility elected not to construct transmission it had the right to construct? And Mr. Long, if maybe somebody could reach out to the commissioner so that answer can get to the entire committee, that would be great.
We'll do that. We'll make sure it gets communicated.
Thank you.
Representative Swazinski, I apologize that we ran out of time. Did you have something on process or committee before we wrap?
No, Mr. Chair. I just had a question for testifiers. I understand we're out of time. That's fine.
Okay. I apologize. Thank you all so much for a rich and really interesting hearing. I appreciate everybody's attention to this important issue. This is certainly something we'll be returning to this session. Thank you all so much, and our hearing is adjourned.